Although I consider setting sail for Rax immediately, I head to the tavern first. Like the king said, I'm responsible, and I won't leave the Amari family in a bind just because my grandmother has wounded my pride. Besides, I want to collect my pay, so I have coin to trade during my journey through the Lucen Wilds, and inform my best friend that I'm taking off, so she doesn't worry. When I reach bottom of the jug, the tavern is bursting with diners, and both sisters look as though they've blasted themselves with their air magic. Their hair stands on end, and their collarbones are glossed in sweat.
Finally! Where in the Three Kingdoms have you been?
She blusters past me with a platter of drinks that she deposits on a table. Guilt worms itself behind my breastbone at the idea of leaving them. They'll replace me. I'm replaceable. That little voice, which has spurred me to act impetuously in the past, spurs me to stick to my plan. It isn't like I can go home, not after the way I stormed out. I look over my shoulder, the same way I've looked over my shoulder 100 times since I banged the door of my house shut, expecting to find Nonna trailing me. The only person staring at me is a bearded fisherman scrubbing down his deck. My grandmother is as prideful as I am. Expecting her to chase me is like expecting snowfall at the height of summer. Swallowing back the lump in my throat, I roll up my sleeves and get to work. It's mindless, which allows me to plot my next steps. Even though deep down I presume Bronwyn will be waiting for me with a saddled steed, if she isn't, do I set off without a horse? It only dawns on me now that the clothes I wear are completely impractical. However much I hate my boots and overwashed frocks, I can't exactly trek across Monteluce in silk slippers and a dress as delicate as butterfly wings. In Rax, clothes are sewn to endure. I'll trade with someone. Surely I'll have no trouble rehoming such pretty frocks.
Oh, first off, where did you get that dress? It's gorge. Secondly, what's eating you?
I borrowed it from Phoebus's sister.
Flavia, I Hate Halflings Occulti lent you a dress?
Phoebus lent it to me.
And he had one of his sister's dresses lying around because... Oh.
I'm not certain what conclusion she's drawn, but I leave her with it. Maybe Phoebus will tell her about our mourning, but I won't. Especially not in a place filled with perked ears.
As for what's eating me, I slept with Dante.
Even though my afternoon deflowering is not on the front line of my thoughts, I want Sybil to hear it from me and not a random patron. The copper jug she came to refill slips from her fingers and clatters noisily against the bar, catching the attention of the 10 or so diners hunched in front of drinks and wooden boards of cured meat and cheese.
Oh my gods!
She leads me by the elbow to a dusky corner of the tavern, her mouth still gaping.
And you could have warned me it hurts.
The ache has dulled to sporadic pangs.
I can't believe you slept with Dante.
In truth, I can hardly believe it myself. The afternoon feels surreal. I know.
Was it everything you dreamed of and more?
I hesitate because, no, it wasn't. As much as I want to confess this to Sib, Dante and I will be married someday. It's in poor taste to complain about your husband's lovemaking. Besides, we were pressed for time. It's bound to get better. I'm leaving.
Because of the sex? Was it that bad or that good?
Not because of the sex.
Then why?
I need to get away from Tare Lakeso for a little while. Commander D'Argento is breathing down my neck and things at home have been tense.
Your mother?
No, Nonna. She squeezes my arm.
I'm sorry, Fal.
Suddenly her sympathy morphs to eagerness.
Let's leave together.
I'd love nothing more, but it'd be unfair to drag her into my mess. Moreover, I'm genuinely worried the prophecy won't come to pass if I don't go at it alone, and I really need it to come true. I cannot take you with me, honey. It's something I need to do on my own. Besides, your parents and sister would never forgive me if I took you away from here. And then Phoebus will insist on coming, but now that he has a new boyfriend...
What? That weasel! He said he wasn't serious about Mercutio.
I think he likes him more than he'll admit. Even to himself.
You should have seen them at the revel the other night. They were so...
Once you two are done gossiping, I'd appreciate some assistance.
Gianna swipes her glistening brow with her wrist.
Sorry, Gia. Tell me who needs what.
I dry my hands on my pretty skirt.
Table 10 wants a pitcher of wine, and the commander wants a platter of prosciutto.
The commander's here. My gaze zips toward the pointy-jawed man in white, sitting with another man dressed in uniform, not one I recognize. He's not here to spy on you, Fallon. He's here for food.
I'll take table 10.
I return to the bar and snatch one of the ready-to-go jugs lined up on the counter, then swing around the bar toward the 6 Tariquardens playing cards. As I refill their cups, Catriona, who's just descended the stairs, bustles toward Silvius. The tavern is rowdy, and the commander's table is along the far wall, so I don't hear their exchange. But I'm guessing she's gauging his interest in a rendezvous. I pray he says yes, because when I make my grand escape, I prefer for him not to see me off. I pour out the last droplet of fizzy fey wine, just as his gaze slithers over the courtesan and zeroes in on me. Catriona glances over her shoulder with a little sigh. Does this mean he refused her advances? And if he did, is it because he's working? Or because he's finally decided that sleeping with other women won't win him the respect of the one he wants? As I wind my way back towards Sybil, I debate whether to tell her about Silvius's desire to marry her or her sister, but that would require a long-winded explanation about how I learned this, and I haven't yet informed her of my unfortunate date with the king. In truth, I'm somewhat surprised she hasn't heard about it. The Lucens do so love to gossip, and what better fodder than a halfling getting arrested for serpent charming?
Papa needs help plating something.
Janna motions to the kitchen. I shoulder open the swing door and am about to offer to help, when I notice Marcello butterflying pigeons on a chopping board. The birds are featherless, but their heads are still attached.
Oh!
My stomach heaves and I swoon. I clutch the doorframe and wait for my vision to color and my insides to settle before even attempting to take a step forward. It's not the first time I've seen Marcello prepare a roast, but for some reason, for a fleeting moment, it reminded me of the crow. And yes, admittedly, I tried to skewer it earlier, but only to turn it back into a gewgaw, not into someone's supper.
Fallon, are you all right?
Daphne is at my side, arm laced around my waist in support.
Sorry, I forgot to eat today.
It only strikes me then that I have, indeed, forgotten. She leads me to a wooden stool too close to the chopping board and unwraps a block of pecorino. After slivering it, she unscrews the lid off a jar of pickled vegetables and sets both in front of me. Keeping my gaze on the grimy floor beneath my stool, I shovel down my meal. I don't feel any better once I'm done, probably because I ate too quickly, but I'm glad for the sustenance. As I scrub my plate in the sudsy basin, I tell Daphne and Marcello that I have to make an impromptu trip, and no, nothing bad has happened to anyone, but I won't be able to work at the tavern for the foreseeable future.
It's about time. Marcello and I were wondering when you'd fly the nest.
How appropriate.
You should encourage Sib to do the same. Maybe she could come with you. You girls have the grandest of times.
I can't. I cannot take her with me right now. Once I'm settled, though.
They look at each other, brows pleated.
Settled?
I'm meeting a friend. And, well, I want to see where it goes, but I haven't told Sib about him.
Ah, so this is about some boy. The one we spoke about the other night?
Yes.
I lie. Marcello's wariness doesn't fade. If anything, now that he hears I'm going off to meet a man, he seems downright disappointed in me. I briefly wonder how he'd feel if he learned this man had wings and feathers, and quite possibly isn't male at all.
Has Ceres met this friend of yours?
His tone is strained.
Do you really think he'd still want to rendezvous with me if he'd met Nonna? She just may be more frightening than Justice.
Well, I'd feel better knowing his name, in case anything...
Daphne slaps her husband's arm.
Leave the poor girl alone. Don't you remember how we'd sneak around behind our parents' backs?
I kiss her on the cheek.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Daphne removes her coin purse, but I tell her I'll pick up my wages at the end of my shift, and to deduct a canteen, a block of hardened cheese, and some dried fruit.
Won't this man feed you?
Marcello is tapping the flat edge of his butcher knife against his open palm, as though ready to slaughter my fake lover.
I'm sure he will, Mikori. Now set that knife down before you injure yourself and bleed all over Signore Guardano's meal. pigeon in blood sauce might be a delicacy in Neba, but not in our civilized kingdom.
When he doesn't set the knife down, I say,
I'd rather leave prepared, in case it doesn't work out and I must make my own way.
Smart girl.
They won't even
Daphne arches an eyebrow at her husband, who's still grumbling into his beard about boys not being raised like in the olden days.
I'll get your supplies ready before the night is through.
Thank you.
I pick up a tray of food that's ready to be delivered and head back into the dining room. I'm crossing my fingers that the commander has downed his drink and left, but he's still there. And worse, he watches me weave around tables. When I slide back around the bar, I want to scour my skin to remove the slimy goosebumps he's raised. Even though technically I'm not running away from anything, I won't miss the obtrusive male. Especially after Catriona slides into the seat in front of me and says,
That man is obsessed with you, Mikara. Are you sure you don't want me to negotiate a tariff on your hymen's behalf?
I blush from the roots of my hair to the nails on my toes because she delivered those words loudly. Keeping my attention on the jug of water I'm wiping down, I murmur,
I'd rather move to Rax and abstain from sexual relations for the rest of my life.
I could have confessed I had no more hymen, but that's really none of her or anyone's business. She blinks, even though it isn't the first time I've hinted at my distaste for the man. My firing nerves hurl a smile over my lips.
But thank you for thinking of me and my maidenhood.
A shame. Such a shame.
The exact opposite. The commander would probably wring my neck while fucking me to force a damning confession from my lips. The rest of the evening, I silently will the man to leave before last call, but the stubborn ass doesn't budge from his seat, and although he isn't outright gawping, my neck prickles intermittently from his stare. What if he waits for me until the end of my shift? How am I supposed to negotiate transport into Rax with a high-ranking official on my tail? When the penultimate customers leave, I finally head over to his table.
That'll be 1 silver and 15 coppers.
He nods at his table companion, who seems more of a decoy than a live person, considering how motionless he is. The younger man digs 2 coins out, both silver.
I'll be back with your change.
I whirl on my aching feet. To think my day isn't over.
Keep the change, Signorina Rossi.
I'll be sure to tell the Amaris of your generosity.
Before I can retreat, he calls out to me again.
Seducing the prince won't help your case.
I don't want to engage this man. I have places to be, crows to find. But, oh no, there goes my ingenious plan.
Do say, who should I seduce then? The king himself? You?
I think, or rather hope, my snark will shut the male up once and for all. But he decides to needle me some more.
Do you know what your Prince Charming is doing at this very moment?
Silvius's voice is so close that I spin around. He hovers over me, hands bound behind his back as per usual, lips fashioned into a smirk.
He's dining with the Glasson Princess. I hear they dated when he was stationed up north.
Good for him.
I can tell you don't believe he has any affection for her.
Because he doesn't, not romantically.
Do you kiss men you're not romantically involved with?
No.
My point exactly.
What is your point?
Before coming here tonight, I had a meeting in Isola Quarry. When I arrived, Dante's tongue was buried deep in the princess's throat.
You're lying. He removes an enameled snuff box from his pant pocket and pinches out a single flake of salt, which he presses onto the tip of his tongue. Each word embeds itself into the fragile casing of my heart, causing the organ to ache.
The man won't sleep with whores because the Glasson Princess won't allow him into her bed if he does. I'm guessing he hasn't told her about you, though.
He slides the snuffbox toward me, and although I don't want to play this game, I scoop out a fingerful of flakes, which I sniff. Salt. It truly is salt. He snaps the box shut and returns it to his pocket.
You look positively distraught by the news.
I roll my fingers into such tight fists that my nails tattoo small crescents inside my palms.
Commander Silvius, the establishment is closed.
Her voice clangs like metal striking metal.
I'll take a room, preferably one without a roach.
Gianna's nostrils flare as she watches the silver coin flip end over end to the ground, not even attempting to seize it.
I'm afraid all our rooms are booked for the night.
Are they now? Catriona mentioned business was slow for the Doxies this evening when she propositioned me.
Gia doesn't gratify him with an answer.
Don't forget your coin on your way out.
Careful, Signorina Amari. I could make or break this establishment's reputation.
I don't take nicely to threats, Commander. Now, stop harassing my staff and see yourself out, and perhaps quit returning. Like you said, too many roaches crawling around our establishment. It's time we run them out.
The glower he sends her way is frightful, and yet Gianna doesn't even flinch. However hard I want to wrap her in a hug and thank her for her support, guilt that I brought this upon her and her family tacks my feet to the sticky floorboards and my arms to my ribs. My departure may not have been ordained by any god, and yet it's a godsend for everyone around me.
I'm sorry. For what, Fallon? It's my fault he threatens you. Dolce, don't ever again take the blame for fatuous men. Now, lock the door and help me straighten this place before you leave on your adventure.
You heard?
I hear all.
All, huh? Did you hear about the way I spent my afternoon?
Finally! I thought the sprite ass would never leave.
One look between her sister and me has her frowning.
What did I miss?
Fallon was about to recount her adventures on Isola Quarry.
Gods, Gianna truly does hear all.
You went to Isola Quarry without me?
Trust me, you wouldn't have wanted to tag along on that trip. As I tell them about Justice, the King, and the Commander's suggestion to toss me into Mare Luce, Sib's mouth widens and widens until all her pearlescent teeth are on display. Her sister, on the other hand, displays not a gram of shock. As we dim the glow of the lanterns that are strung up from fishing ropes helter-skelter across the room, I ask Gianna,
"Do you think it's true about the Princess of Glass?"
She side-eyes me.
Steal that sweetheart of yours, Fallon, or our world will end up licking away all of its honey.
However poetic, it doesn't answer my question.
Does that mean yes?
No, I hadn't heard of their tryst. Am I surprised by it, though? No. Eponine comes from Neba. It's only natural that Marco would seek an alliance with the Last Kingdom.
Marco can't force his brother to marry if he doesn't want to.
Perhaps. But what if Dante does want to?
Anger gnaws at my insides like a ravenous animal, siphoning all that is sweet until I'm left with a writhing, rabid hunger to dethrone Marco immediately. Perhaps in the end, Dante won't choose me. But the least I can do is make sure he gets to choose for himself. After receiving bone-crushing hugs from Daphne and Marcello, I head out with Sybil onto the moonlit pier. The note her parents inked and sealed with wax tucked into the satchel I've knotted across my drumming chest. My heartbeats are so close together, they rattle the handful of coppers and jostle the food and water that'll keep me going during my mountain crossing. At least the food and water will. I may run out of coin before then if the vision I had of Bronwyn with a horse was brought on by low blood sugar. Here's to hoping it wasn't a hallucination, but an augur of my future. Although the wharf is still calm at this hour, many fishermen are already up and about, readying their lures and nets. As we walk toward the ferry's berth, the moonlight tangles in Mattia's shoulder-length mane. He's crouched on the deck of Antony's boat, scraping barnacles off a cage. His movements slow as his head tips up and he sees us. I wave. Antony must not have told him we were already over because I get a tentative smile and a wave back.
You think it'd be weird if I asked him out on a date?
Why would it be weird?
Because I slept with Antony.
Over a year ago? I say go for it.
What if he rejects me? Who'll hold my hand if you're gone?
Phoebus.
What about my other hand?
I won't be gone long.
I wish you'd tell me where exactly you were going.
Where the winds blow me.
What if the winds blow you off a cliff?
I'll make sure not to stand too close to one's edge.
You really should head to Pteraspagia by sea. I've heard people disappear in Monteluce.
There's one road, and it's constantly patrolled. Can you imagine the odds of getting lost?
You're good at defying odds.
Grinning, I knock my shoulder into hers. After we reach the ferry pontoon, I hand the blue-eyed canal captain Marcello's letter that explains my reason for crossing, gathering supplies for the tavern on his behalf, then extend a copper to pay for my ticket.
Ferry's full.
Looks pretty deserted to me.
Ferry's full.
He hands me back the note, which I unfold and read over quickly, worried Marcello asked the man not to let me board. But the squiggly curves and loops say exactly what he promised they would say.
That's ridiculous.
Why won't you take me? I catch his gaze flicking over my shoulder and turn. Although I spot no one watching us, he's clearly not letting me cross on someone's orders. The commander's?
Better get your cell phone, Serpent Charmer, because no man will risk his livelihood to help you escape.
I grit my teeth and turn, making Sybil whirl.
Silvius is behind this.
Why would he... Oh, the turd.
She couldn't have found a more befitting nickname. Perhaps I'll start calling him Commander Turd from now on. It has a nice ring to it.
You should ask Antony. He'd surely take you.
I don't want him to get in trouble.
I suppose you could always swim across. You've already had a shitty day. What's a little more shit in your day?
Your humor knows no bounds, Sib. Although the idea of wading through dirty water turns my stomach, I contemplate whistling for Minimus and diving into the rippling blackness. But two things stop me. A, Minimus may neglect the fact that I'm no serpent. And B, I may be playing into Silvius's hands. I raise my gaze to the gauzy clouds twisting around the waning moon, wishing Bronwyn would proffer a third option my way. When no rope or iron crow tumble from the sky, or blackbird swoops overhead, I lower my gaze back to the murky forest dotted with torchlight beyond the Barrack Island. I'm aware it's an illusion, but Rakochi seems to be floating away from Tarelexo.
I'll be right back. Don't move.
She untangles our arms. As she leaves me standing alone on the wharf to contemplate my crumbling future alone, I lower my lids and think. But instead of ferreting out solutions, my thoughts stray to Isola Quarry and the princess Dante's apparently courting. Here I thought he'd rejected Beryl and the others for me. Why am I risking my neck and sanity to get him on the throne if he intends to sit a princess down beside him? He promised there'd be no other woman. After anger, jealousy pelts me. But then another wave of anger washes out my blazing rancor. Why am I taking Commander Turd's word? Perhaps he too is resistant to salt. Perhaps he thinks he saw them kiss, and that's why he was able to speak the words under...
Come on, person of great interest. I found you a solution.
Which one?
You'll see.
I told you I won't involve Antony.
That's why I asked Mattia. I even struck a bargain on your behalf.
Sybil, no.
Oh, chill. It's a win-win for me. Not only do I get to make my friend's dream come true, but I get a date with a sexy blonde.
She drags me along while I list all the reasons I won't set a slipper on that boat.
You may never have your date with your sexy blonde because he's locked up somewhere. Come on.
Stop your mutterings and climb aboard already.
Sybil.
Fallon.
I've always dreamed of a three-way with the two of you.
Mattia says this so loudly, it gets the attention of a passing guard and a few sailors. He holds out his hands. Sib grabs a hold of one, then nods for me to take the other.
Antonia will be so fucking jealous.
What would I be so fucking jealous about?
The blue-eyed captain emerges from below deck in only a pair of slacks. Like magnets, my eyes rove over his bare chest, widening at the sight of the row upon row of luminescent bands cinching his carved biceps. Does he strike bargains for sport? I count 20 on one arm and spy even more on the other. Before he can catch me staring, I force my gaze to a neighboring bearded captain sorting through a box of tackle.
Look at the timing, ladies. The cabin is all ours.
Sib plucks my hand from my side and sticks it in Mattia's palm. Before I can react, he reels us both onto the vessel. Antony steps in between Mattia and myself, forcing his friend's arm to bend and his fingers to release me.
No.
Antony. Fine, a foursome.
She grips my hand and tugs me into the cabin below deck. Antony's mouth pinches harder, but he follows. The second we're inside, Sybil smacks the door shut.
God, subtlety isn't your forte.
What the fuck is going on?
You just woke up, didn't you?
She looks him over, lingering on his sculpted torso.
Start explaining.
Commander D'Argento suggested I be tossed into Mare Luz to prove I can tame serpents. I'll tell Antony exactly what I told Sybil, which isn't the story I gave her parents. So many lies I'm perpetrating. All to protect those I love, but still.
The ease with which they tumble from my lips floods me with guilt. King Marco needed to leave for Tare Spaggia, so he postponed my dip in the ocean until his return next week. I believe he or my grandfather decided to have me watched.
I still don't understand why you're here for a threesome with my first mate.
She's getting to it. Gods, you're cranky this morning.
I wet my lips with the tip of my tongue, my fingers sliding along the strap of my makeshift satchel.
I don't want to be tossed into Mare Luz, Antony. I don't want to test out Silvius's theory, especially not in front of the king. Gods only knows what he'd do to me if I did have an affinity, and the serpents only know what they'd do to me if it turns out I didn't.
So you're looking to flee?
Yes. That's where the lies begin. I told Sib's parents I was meeting a man on the other side, and that was the reason I was leaving. But I'm not meeting any man. I'm trying to get away before I'm either turned into a serpent chew toy or into a new tool in the king's armory.
And Prince Charming can't bail you out?
Cauldron only knows how. I keep my calm. He used up his ace after I fell into the canal 10 years ago. For a long moment, no one says a thing.
So, your plan is to spend your life on the run?
No. My plan is to reach Tare Spaggia. My great-grandmother, Zima Rossi, lives there, and she's a very influential woman who I believe will protect me.
You believe?
His tone makes my fingers scrunch Marcello's letter. Where Sybil gobbled up my lie, cooing that going to Justice's mother is brilliant, Antony is clearly not convinced.
Your plan is terrible, Fallon.
I didn't ask for your opinion.
Maybe, but you're clearly here to ask for something of me.
This was a bad idea. I turn and reach for the doorknob. Sybil scuttles against the wall to block me.
I will not let you die because someone's pride is getting in the way.
Even though the cabin is dark, I don't miss the nerve feathering Antony's jaw.
This is a big ask, Antony. And yeah, you can say no. But Fallon needs to get across that canal. I want to borrow your boat. I'll pay you for it, of course.
Sybil!
You want to... Do you even know how to drive a boat?
How difficult can it be? You two do it.
And how exactly will you get through the guard barrage with a wanted felon, huh?
I'm not a felon. Yet. Sib snatches the note her father wrote me and pushes it into Antony's hands. Because the boat is wedged in between others, the single porthole spits out very little light. Antony squints to make out the writing.
I know you're literate, so you must have noticed. It says Fallon's name on there.
Nothing a little ink smudge can't fix. Besides, it's signed by my father.
What if they ask to search the vessel?
That's why I want to borrow your boat, Antony.
She taps her foot against the little round rug. A long beat passes. I'm not certain why everyone's so silent and grim until I catch Mattia gnawing on his lip while Antony scowls.
How do you know about that?
That? His Adam's apple jostles up and down the column of his throat.
Who told you?
I put two and two together. I know you and my sister aren't dating, or dating humans, and yet you two spend an inordinate amount of time going back and forth to Rax together. I approve of what you're doing, by the way.
What are you doing?
His gaze snaps to mine with such force, I take a step back and shut my mouth.
That's really none of your business. As to borrowing my boat, that's a no.
We're talking about Fallon's life. Do you really want her to die?
I said no to borrowing it because I'll be driving the fucking thing.
Not sure that's such a great idea, Cap. Word on the street is that whoever gives her passage will be tossed into Philea's serpents.
So you're okay with letting Sybil swim with the serpents?
She's a girl. She won't get caught.
What sort of dumbass assumption is that?
Mattia's hand falls from his hair and settles at his side.
You really think D'Argento would hesitate for a second to punish a female, Mattia? Not to mention that Sybil is Fallon's best friend. All of Luce knows it. She'll be the first person he'll look at. Which is why Sib won't be on this boat. You and Riccio either.
Antony's blue eyes finally settle on mine, full of shadows that have nothing to do with the ambient light.
I'll take her across.
I want to protest, but what other option do I have?
We'll leave at dusk tonight.
I need to leave now.
You just told me the king won't act upon D'Argento's idea until he returns.
I know, but I cannot go home. I got in a fight with Nonna about seeking out her mother-in-law.
Oh, how the lies roll off my tongue, ringing with such truths I may start to believe them.
You can stay with me. Besides, you could do with some sleep.
I have no doubt I look as frazzled as I feel.
Sybil slides her hand through the crook of my arm.
So we meet here at nightfall?
No, we, just Fallon. And ask Gianna to prepare her for transport. She'll know what to do.
Gods, what sort of illicit operations are these two running in Rax? Sib opens the door. Before she can tug me out, Antony nods at me.
I want a minute with Fallon.
When neither Mattia nor Sybil make any move to leave, he adds,
alone.
I nibble on my lower lip, expecting he's about to ask me to grovel or to apologize for falling back into Dante's arms a heartbeat after I left his, since I imagine he knows. After all, I kissed the prince under the scalding sun for all of Luz to see. Once the door shuts behind the two others, he asks,
if you really think your great-grandmother can help, I'll take you straight to Taraspagia.
That's days at sea. Even if you hit me, it'll be too much of a risk.
You can't honestly be planning to walk all the way there.
I'm going to get a horse.
It'll take you over a week to reach the other side of the mainland.
I'm aware.
But you'd prefer that to a few days on my boat? If you're worried I'm going to ask you to put out, I won't.
I know you'd never take advantage of me, Antony.
So why won't you take me up on my offer?
Because I won't. I can't. Insisting won't alter my answer.
I'm not scared of the commander.
I remember the feeling I got when we'd attended the party, of the familiarity between my four fellow outcasts and the humans. Now it all makes sense. I imagine as much, considering your Rakochan activities, whatever they may be. The air leaving our lungs and the waves lapping at the hull become the only sound in the cabin for an interminable stretch of time.
What happens if your great-grandmother refuses to help?
I'll board a vessel to Shab. Surely they'll take me in, seeing as how they hate our king.
No boat will take you to the queendom.
Then I'll swim there.
I thought you were doing all this to avoid swimming.
Then I'll scurry back to Monteluce and hide there for the rest of my mortal days.
Monteluce is one of the most dangerous places in the kingdom.
I'm not scared.
You should be.
His blistering tone must heat his skin, because his ocean and sun scent embalms the small cabin. I place my hand on the doorknob. Well, I choose guileless oblivion. It works for me.
I need to get the boat ready for the day. See you at dusk.
I'm sorry. He doesn't respond. Doesn't even look my way, but I know he heard me. How could he not? The cabin is tiny, and I didn't whisper or croak. I walk off Antony's boat feeling like smushed dung and rethinking involving such a good man. Especially when I have nothing to offer him, except my friendship.
You will be queen.
Bronwyn's words clang through my mind, reminding me that if I'm successful, no, when I succeed, I'll be able to give him all the riches he deserves. I'll buy him that apartment he wants, a whole house. I'll make him rise alongside me. I stand in front of the oblong mirror pinned to Gianna's wall, tightening the belt on a pair of pants. Pants! Actual pants! The sort women are forbidden from wearing. The last woman who dared walk the streets of Tarelexo in a pair ended up wearing them to greet the serpents. Fashion can be deadly in Luz when it goes against the monarchy's rules. However much I like the beauty of gowns, there's no denying that pants feel like swaths of freedom. How am I ever supposed to go back to wearing dresses?
Thanks to that half-baked scheme of yours, you may never have to. Crossing Monteluce on your own? It's foolish and reckless and—
You really know how to build up a girl's confidence.
Fallon, I'm worried.
Gianna pulls so hard on the fabric with which she's flattening my breasts that it strips my lungs of air. I turn away from the mirror and put a hand to her shoulder.
I know your reproof is born from a place of love, but please, Gia, don't make me rethink it. I spent half the night scolding myself and the other half hyperventilating so hard Sib pried my eyes open to make sure I hadn't turned into an air fae, then built a fort of pillows between us.
Gia's slender jaw ticks, undoubtedly with more admonitions.
Besides, I could turn all that criticism around on you.
Her pupils spread, blotting most of the gray.
Look, I'd prefer for your parents to keep believing I'm running away to meet a man behind my grandmother's back.
She sighs like a warrior surrendering his weapons, before doing a very un-Gianna-like thing. She steps forward and traps me in a hug.
Oh,
Don't die, you crazy girl.
Right back at you, Gia. Her exhale stirs the tendrils of hair beside my ears, and she releases me.
So this is how you get me on Antony's boat without anyone noticing?
As I slide my satchel over my flattened chest, I give my mirror image another once-over. She's managed to make me resemble a prepubescent boy.
No! That getup is so you don't catch the eye of the patrols and racks. Not to mention, it'll make riding a horse much easier.
She talks like someone who's been there and done that. Surely because she has been there and done that. At my raised eyebrow, a twinkle lights up her eyes and spreads to her mouth.
Hope you're not the type to get dizzy.
Apparently, I'm very much the type to get dizzy. Then again, I'd wager the few coppers jingling in my belted purse that the organs of anyone stuffed inside a wine barrel and rolled across cobbles would rumple and spasm. I rue myself for having gobbled down the bowl of raisin-flecked polenta Sybil carried up to me when I woke in the middle of the afternoon. The softened cornmeal was supposed to stick to my bones, but it's not sticking, unless there's a bone in my throat I'm not aware of. I clench my teeth as we go over another lumpy patch. Todd Alexians really need to level their roads.
Signorina Amari.
Silvius's smarmy voice penetrates the curved slats that keep me hidden. My heart jostles. Since I'm facing up, I squint to make him out through the slats. But the outside world is already thick with a darkness that rivals the one inside the barrel.
Commander?
Her voice is tight but steady, betraying no emotion except her tangible loathing for the man she threw out of the tavern last night.
We're looking for your little round-eared friend who didn't make it home last night.
I work hard on quieting my breaths, grateful for the clamor of the wharf. I understand why they chose dusk to roll me out to Antony. The fishermen and merchants are all out, getting rid of what they weren't able to sell in Tare Quori.
I've many little round-eared friends. You'll have to be more specific.
I can just imagine Silvius grinding his teeth.
Fallon Rossi.
Fallon crashed with my sister last night. She was exhausted from her lively day, so my guess is she's still lying in Morpheus's arms.
Your guess? Don't you live with your sister?
We Tarlexians may lead modest lives, but we do have separate bedrooms, Commander. Now, if you don't mind, I need to get rid of this wine that's soured instead of matured.
A pause.
And how will you be disposing of it?
The usual way.
Enlighten me.
It'll be brought to Rax, where all Tarlexian garbage goes.
It's hopefully no more than my runaway imagination that makes me think the barrel trembles beneath Gianna's hands.
Fetch me a glass.
My heart stops beating.
I want to sample your soured wine, Signorina Amari.
Oh, gods. Oh, gods. I hear a man yelling he's going to kill another. I feel the rumble of footfalls as men race to intercede.
For Cauldron's sakes, half-bloods are all cooks. Toss him into the canal.
He must speak the order to the guard beside him because he doesn't bark it. The quay has grown quiet, save for a few muffled grunts.
Commander, the man is clearly inebriated. Hardly a reason to have him put to death.
There's nothing quite like cold water to clear the mind.
Don't do it.
Or what, Signorina Amari?
Or you'll lose everyone's respect and obedience. Think of the order you gave these men not to allow Fallon passage. If you send Mattia into that canal and he gets taken by the serpents, do you really think anyone would hesitate to work against you the next time you require their compliance?
I could only wish them luck, considering the fleet of guards.
Here I thought you possessed a modicum of political savviness, but I guess that isn't necessary to lead soldiers.
My pulse is so wild, my ears have started to ring.
Perhaps you require a little swim to clear your head, Gianna.
My mind begins to whirl as though the wine-soaked wood is liberating spirituous fumes, and the air grows oppressive to the point where I begin to panic because oxygen feels worryingly thin. Oh, gods, I'm gonna suffocate to death. The palms I have pressed against the sides of the barrel grow clammy and my spine damp with sweat. I will the serpents to rise from the water's depths and put on a show, splash dirty water on all the guards. I will Minimus not to be part of the maritime assault. The commander gasps. Or maybe it's Gianna. Perhaps it's the both of them.
What in the underworld is that?
His tone is no longer bladed, but almost fearful. I must have prayed to the gods hard enough, because something is clearly coming.
It looks like a cloud of birds.
Her voice is low, as though she's sensed my panic and is trying to calm me by giving me a play-by-play of what's unfolding beyond my cramped hidey hole. Squawking pierces the moist, airless darkness surrounding me. From the ruckus the creatures make and Janna's comparison to a cloud, I fathom the bird's number in the hundreds.
Bloody cauldron.
Guards, ready your weapons.
Although loud, Silvius's voice seems to grow fainter as he gives the order. And then I'm rolling, my head and bum alternately whacking against the sides of the barrel. Janna is running, no longer taking care not to bang me up. I know she has no choice, so I squeeze my eyes and steel my muscles.
Fuck, that was close.
His voice penetrates my hideout, and my lids flutter open, lashes damp from the swirl of emotion.
He wanted to throw Mattia into the canal.
I suspected as much when they dangled him above it. Now quit gawking at the birds, Riccio, and give me a hand.
Have you ever seen so many ducks and herons and...
Riccio, focus.
He sounds like he could snap my barrel with just his bare hands.
Gianna, get back to the tavern.
A minute later, I'm finally set down.
Untie the mooring lines and get off the boat.
Air. Sweet, delicious air penetrates my cramped lungs. I steal lungfuls of it as Antony reaches down and grips me underneath my armpits to heave me up. His gaze rakes over me in quick sweeps. My hyperventilation and complexion must display how I feel.
The worst is over.
But is it? Don't I need to crouch inside another small hole? I really don't like tight spaces. He motions to the open hatch.
Get in.
I don't think I can.
Valin, please. If you don't, then all the risks Gianna and Mattia took will have been wasted.
I flinch because the guilt he lashes me with feels like a whip. As though the birds have awakened the serpents, the boat rocks hard and knocks into its neighbors. I fall against Antony.
I need to get up on deck to steer.
He grips my head between his palms, presses his forehead against mine.
Valin Rossi, I don't know if you believe in omens and gods, but I believe everything happens for a reason. And those birds, they came out for a reason. Maybe that reason isn't you, but what if it is? What if they came to help you get away?
My mouth goes dry, and my pulse rears to a stop. Of course. This is Bronwyn's doing. Or the crows. His rough thumbs are soft against my cheekbones.
Perhaps serpents aren't the only animals you can charm.
I swallow, and it feels like I'm trying to gulp down an obsidian spike. Have I done this? Has my panic somehow carried every bird in loose to me? I nod, my forehead slipping off Antony's, then twist my face away from his and climb down into the hole. It's twice the length of the wine barrel, but so shallow, I need to lay down. Bolstered by Antony's words, I slide into place. Antony stands above the hole and wastes precious seconds staring down at me. His eyes seem to gleam as though he's seeing someone else in my stead. Or not seeing anyone at all. The boat bucks sideways, tipping the barrel and stealing the trapdoor from Antony's fingers. The slice of wood shuts with a deafening whack, pitching me in total, suffocating darkness. Don't panic, I tell myself, flattening my palms on either side of the cubby space. Don't panic. Bronwyn is watching, and the crow is aiding. Or the cauldron. Or one of our gods. I feel both discombobulated puppet and shiny fishing lure, flopping from a fraying string between calculating men and shrewd beasts. Whoever is manipulating my fate should probably have toned down my allure to avoid their chosen doer becoming someone's choice prisoner. What feels like a century later, Antony's boat stops moving. I think we've arrived until I hear gruff voices overhead. Their words are muffled by the closed cabin door and the small rug strewn over the floor, but I don't miss the soft thump of someone jumping aboard. The groan of wood makes my breathing falter, and then the door hinges creak, and the voices become so clear that I know someone's standing on the threshold, peering down the three steps that lead into the cabin.
What will they think when they spot the empty barrel? Unless Antony has disposed of it or shut it.
Commander thinks the girl's behind the birds.
He's an imaginative man, the Commander.
You think it impossible? Word is she can communicate with serpents.
So can most females who work at bottom of the jug. If she didn't favor pointy ears and crowns, I may have dropped her off with my next delivery of fairy dust.
I'm too busy wondering what fairy dust is to worry about Antony discussing my crush on Dante.
I've got the pointy ears.
Just missing the crown, Simonus.
The army blacksmith owes me a small favor. I can get him to finagle something resembling a crown.
You do that, then sprite me your offer, and I'll negotiate on your behalf with Catriona, who's in charge of all the tavern girls.
The commander doesn't get wind of this.
Have I ever shared anything concerning you with D'Argento?
No, but I hear he's got a thing for the girl.
It's called bloodlust.
Not just that sort of lust.
I'm so disgusted, I let out a little squeak.
Did you hear that?
Did I hear what, Simonus?
The squeak sounded like vermin.
Sure hope I've got no mice, or I'm sending you the bill.
Excuse me?
The man shifts, peppering me with dust motes. I don't dare breathe for fear of sneezing.
I had to dock in racks for hours the other day, waiting on V to fulfill your order.
Not my fault your human friends are lazy.
Fine. No bill, if you'll let me be on my way. V told me about a brand new way to cut the dust and make the high last twice as long. I'm picking up samples.
Same price?
Maybe cheaper.
Bring one back on your way home.
Will do. Since you're standing there, can you lift my mattress?
Why?
To check for mice. I'm no rodent fan.
Check your own damn mattress.
The floorboards screech as he backtracks out of the cabin, and then the door thwacks shut. Although my lungs burn, I wait to feel the boat bob before I release my breath and suck in a fresh lungful. I'm still gulping down air when the boat comes to another standstill. My impatience to emerge from the black hull is mitigated by my fear of getting caught by a passing patrol. So I wait. Seconds slip into minutes before the rug finally rustles and the round hatch is lifted. Gasping in a breath that feels like pure sunshine after so much darkness, I sit up and almost knock heads with Antony. He rises from his crouch, tension creasing every smooth plane of his face. I pant as though I've just risen from the depths of Mare Luz.
I'm sorry. I squeaked.
I would have squawked in horror too had I heard D'Argento was sweet on me.
I shudder, my skin feeling dredged in cobwebs. As I take in the empty room, Antony must have tossed the barrel overboard, smart man.
You mentioned crossing Monte Luce on horseback. Where are you getting your horse from?
In the forest.
In the... You do realize Rax is all forest, and a large one at that?
I swallow and nod, praying that vision I had of Bronwyn and the crow will come to fruition. And soon. Gods only know what monsters lurk in these woods. He kicks the rug back into place over the closed hatch.
You're just going to wander the woods until a horse magically appears?
I'm fully aware of how daft it is, thanks to Gianna.
Stealing my spine, I trudge up the stairs, but stop and dig a copper out of my pocket that I extend to Antony.
Thank you for the risks you took. I'll never forget your kindness.
He stares at my coin, then up at me.
What the fuck is that?
Payment. For taking me across.
Put that away.
You did me a favor. A dangerous one at that. It's the least I can do.
It's also the only thing I can do. I've got nothing else to give him. Well, besides food, but I doubt he needs any.
Actually, there is something else I can give him.
Something Nonna has warned me against, but I trust Antony not to use it wickedly. I descend the three steps and rest my palm against his bicep.
Tu devo, Antony Greco.
He inhales a sharp breath that I attribute to the pain of my bargain sinking into his flesh. But then his eyebrows tip toward one another.
Does it hurt when it appears?
I peek down at my chest, wondering if a glowing dot has materialized on my smooshed chest. I can't feel anything.
It usually does, but...
But what?
No bargain inscribed itself on my skin.
How is that possible? I hook my index finger into my crushing chest strap. Although I don't manage to pry it far from my skin, I do manage to cop a look at my cleavage. No dot glows.
Are you certain you're Fae, Fallon?
I roll my fingers into fists as doubt insinuates itself into me anew. I blast it away. After all, both my grandparents saw me emerge from Mamma.
Maybe it didn't take because I'm defective.
He steps toward me, so close his scent punches up my nose.
Well, if you aren't defective, what if you just aren't Fae? What if your grandmother stole a human child because your mother lost hers from the trauma of ear culling?
I rear back from him, really hating this changeling theory.
My grandmother would never steal someone else's child.
Gnashing my teeth, I whirl around. He catches my wrist and reels me back.
I didn't mean to offend you, but one has to wonder.
One doesn't have to wonder anything.
Why didn't you go to Dante?
Because I didn't want to cause a rift between him and his brother.
I lie. I won't take the bait. I'll walk out of here with my head held high and my confidence in Dante intact. As I put my foot on the first step...
Know what I think?
I'm not interested in what you think.
I peer into the darkness, on the lookout for sprite patrols. Although Fae trust the winged pests as far as they can throw them, Fae trust humans less. Not to mention they prefer sacrificing sprites to the darkest parts of Luce. When I catch no movement but the gentle sway of leaves, I step out onto the deck and climb onto the boat railing.
I think you were afraid Dante would have refused to help.
Wrong. You're wrong. I don't engage in a debate, merely jump toward the bank. The soles of the knee-high boots I borrowed from Gianna skid on the cluster of slick, knobby roots knifing through the moist ground. I grab onto the nearest trunk to steady my footing, then carefully hop until the soil levels out.
Fallon, wait!